And he was a theoretical physicist for decades, and he started getting worried about the way that the kids were learning physics and taking physics, if you like, the university. And so he decided to try and get involved in physics education research. It started in the early 1980s, and basically what happened is that because they were so concerned at universities about failure rates, I've got, it's on this one of the slides, and you've got that slide in there, so don't worry about it. Sorry about that. And so now there are in about 30 universities in the States, they have actual programs for PhD students in physics go in and do research at the university level. There's not much done at the high school level. We're hoping maybe to change that, but certainly at the university level, they're doing a lot of it. And basically, what Reddish and his friends did was they went out and said, okay, what is a student? How do we describe a student? Let's look at their cognitive background so we can understand what to do. So we're going to look at that a little bit, then identify, you know, we know how a person learns and processes information. How are we going to take those ideas and bring them into the classroom and into the laboratory? Then we've got to say, okay, now how can we create the activities we're going to do, write the material to get those ideas across, and then you're going to do some lab activities. And I'm hoping to get started by about 5-2. We might have to put coffee from 2:15 to 2:30, and then have a short coffee break and go into the labs, okay? So, if you start looking at the cognitive model, you find out that there are, you first have to look at memory, and then look at the way that you use your subconscious mind in order to work with it. Now, memory, very complex stuff, the working memory is obviously very short term, only a few seconds. You just think of a number and soon it's gone back from your mind. Or you try to think of an image of something you see and it sort of fades away and you have to bring it back again. You have to keep on renewing it inside your mind. Okay. Also, it's not very, very large. You can only hold small chunks of information. That's why telephone numbers are 9 long. If you try to have a telephone number 20 long, they'd have to do something to change it because we wouldn't be able to handle it very well. So you've got a little window in your mind, and you've got to try and fit that information in there. And so you bring it in. Now, if you don't have a very good knowledge sort of organization, you can't bring much in, and so you don't have much to deal with. And what they want to try and do in physics education research is to say, okay, how can we develop ways of organizing our knowledge about physics and so on so that we can bring those ideas in so we can use them more effectively? Okay. Get the next one. I'm going to go through this a little quickly, a little faster than I wanted, but that's right. Okay. This is the chunk stuff I talked about. Sorry. Long-term memory. What happens here is that when you bring the information in from your long-term memory, it's combined with short-term memory so that it builds new information. It's context dependent. So if it's stressful, a stressful situation, or if you're engaged, you learn differently. So that's an important thing to think about. The external situation and the way information is presented. For instance, if you ask a student about softball or throwing a ball in class, the way they think about that is different to the way they think about it if they're out on the field. And so you have to recognize that when you're trying to get ideas across to kids. Let's see. Okay. Now this one is hugely important. This is probably one of the most important slides that there is. When a student's presented, a variety of elements of knowledge may be activated. Now if those elements of knowledge are incorrect, then you've got major problems. And one of the major areas of research that the cognitive developers development people have been working on is this whole idea of naive conceptions. They don't use the word misconception because it's sort of perjurative, but the naive conception is that people tend to pick up ideas when they're younger and coming through, and that idea sort of stays in there and they build on it and build on it and it gets even more deeply embedded. There was a writer called Edward de Bono, and he wrote a wonderful book called Mechanism of the Mind, where he talks about, you know, when the child is first born, the memory is like a little flat cello, a surface of jello. When you drop big information in, it's like little drops of water, or hot water dropping on the jello, and it makes a little pit. And if you have information coming in again and again and again, and towards a certain thing, or you respond to a certain stimulus, and it forms a little drop of hot water dropping down on your surface, it forms, and then it moves around, you get deeper pits. And that sort of forms those solid areas in your mind that you use to associate things together with. And if you have started with something which is wrong, it's extremely difficult to get rid of that. Okay. Let me see, where are we? The key to understanding suit reasoning is understanding the patterns of association. So what you're trying to do is go to the kid and say, where are you now when you're trying to learn? So, because what we tend to do is we tend to just take the kids as they are in the classroom and teach them stuff. We don't know where they are in terms of their concepts at all. Now, cognitive resources for learning. Because the mind works by context-dependent patterns and associations, suggests that students reason about physics problems using what they think they know by generalizing their personal experience. And this is where the naive conceptions come in, because, for instance, one of the commonest misconceptions is the, if you look down at the, I'm trying to go too fast. This one here. Students bring into class the basic resources from which they build their future knowledge. Since new knowledge is built only by extending and modifying existing schema, students' existing knowledge is the raw material we've got to work with. And so what that really means is you have to take them where they are, from where they are. You can't just say, okay, I'm starting here today teaching this topic. You have to try and find out what they actually know. And that's, of course, extremely difficult. It has to be done over a sort of long-term basis. One thing they do tend to build up is very strong, robust structures, which I just talked about. The idea, look at this one at the top, common naive conceptions. Any moving object will eventually come to a stop. And logics have that basic idea. We know as physicists that's not what really happens, but that's what they think. And that's what they've seen around them ever since they were young kids. It keeps on being reinforced every time they see something. And so we've got to take that deeply embedded idea and somehow get rid of it. And by just sort of saying it once, we go through Newton's law, isn't going to get rid of that. We have to try and find ways to keep on hitting at it until we get rid of it. They often form inappropriate generalizations, conflations of distinct concepts. There's a reporter in the Fergus area, and he always reports speeding by saying, the motorist was traveling at a high rate of speed. The guy was speeding, traveling, say, 120 kilometers per hour, but he always reports it as traveling at a high rate of speed. And so it's basically the idea of looking at velocity and acceleration of the same idea. But I come to the editor, and he said, it's no good changing it if people won't understand what we're talking about. So, got real problems there. Okay. The second major structure is that students develop primitives and facets. Now, a primitive is an idea which is so simple that students can't even explain it. They just sort of say, well, that's the way it is. And what we have to try and do is look at those ideas and see if we can break them down. The primitives build into things called facets. Well, that's what the cognitive people call them. And they build up into the bigger schemas. The third one here, this is one that I think we all have to really, really work on. And that is the idea of making things relevant to kids. The student responses involving primitives specific to real-world situations can be useful in understanding new concepts. So if they are involved in the real world and they've got their ideas from that real world, what we have to try and do is move into that real world we're trying to teach and use it to sort of get to where we want to go. Now, if you look at all the background information on memory, short-term, long-term memory, and the way kids learn, then there are basically five principles that help us understand what's going on. The first one is constructivist one, and that's a very, very big idea. Individuals build their knowledge by making connections to existing knowledge. They use this knowledge by productively creating response to information they need, they receive. This is an interesting one because when you're sort of doing problems like collision problems, that sort of thing, there's two ways you can do them. You know, you can have this sort of say, what's the spring constant at the end or something like that, and let them find their way through the problem, or you tend to break it down into little chunks so they have more success. Well, when you do the latter way, you're actually giving them a chance to not bother to think. And they have trouble thinking because they don't have this deeply developed schema or way of thinking about physics. As physics teachers, we've been teaching a lot and went to university and so on and thinking about physics for a long time. And so what we have done is gradually built up these very strong core ideas that we don't even know if we almost forget we have. And so when we're talking to students in the classroom, we don't realize they don't have the problem, or we forget. And so we tend to teach in such a way as to allow them to get away with not forming those structures. Another problem is we tend to teach in little snippets. We sort of, the schemas we give them relate to a unit rather than to the whole course, or the whole of physics, like developing a particle theory in a way theory, right through from kindergarten right through, so it's consistent. You can reinforce the same ideas. We don't do that. And so the kids themselves have these little bits of physics from here and there, from year to year. They never have a chance to really form a decent structure. Now, this one, the change principle, is really fundamental. It's very, very important. It's reasonably easy to learn something that matches or extends an existing schema, but changing a well-established schema substantially is difficult. That's a really, really core idea. I like corollary number one. It's hard to learn something we don't almost already know. That's very, very true. If you start with something really, really new, the kids have got nothing that they can bring out of their long-term memory, into their short-term memory to build on it. And so it's very, very difficult to do it. Much of our learning is done by analogy. We, in other words, inside the brain, we've got these little structures that we use to relate things to. If something new comes up, we search back in and say, well, what have I done like that before? How can I match it to something? And so one of the things that the research people have done is develop these touchstone problems. They're very, very fundamental problems that look at core ideas, and then they go through a series of those to try and get rid of the naive conceptions and bring kids into a stronger structure. And number four, it's very difficult to change an established mental model. Okay. Individuality principle. Well, essentially, that's pretty obvious stuff. People have started learning. The sad thing is, there's no unique way to answer the question, what's the best way to teach a particular subject? You really have to sort of do the research and try and find the best way. This is a tough, well, both of these are interesting. This one says, the way our personal experience may be a very poor way to do it. We all think in quite a special way, being physicists, and kids in front of us that think in many, many different ways. And it's difficult to translate into the way they think. Here, we've got to find out where they are. It's the same idea of going back and saying, we can only take it from where they are to where we would like them to go. We first got to find out where they are. The next one. This one is a very important one, especially what sort of thing we're going to do here today. Most individuals' learning is most effectively carried out via social interactions. And so what we really need to do is, in problem solving, for instance, there's quite successful stuff going on. This is the next slide, isn't it? Let's go back to this. Some people do problem solving skills in a communal sort of class situation in order to try and get people working better together. And the same with the lab activities. What I'd like you to do today, when you do the labs, is to not just work in pairs, but talk to the groups around you. You're going to be groups of eight. And so you should be talking to groups around you to try and check on your answers and things like that, and sort of see how it feels to do it. Apparently, the research shows that it's very successful. Okay, these are strategies for getting around the problem. Cognitive conflict. This is the situation where you elicit ideas, confront it, resolve, and reflect, and so on. It's very, very effective as long as you don't use it too much. Some people have reported that what tends to happen is that the students say, oh, geez, I'm another dumb guy, and I keep on doing it wrong. And so it's very effective now and again, but you can overdo it. Okay, restricting the frame, that kind of makes sense. Knowing what's important to know, what isn't important to know. This is really a very important idea, but the trouble is the kids don't know enough about the material to be able to make the decision about what's important and what isn't important. And unless you make it explicit to them, it's very difficult for them to look at a problem and say, yeah, that's data I don't need. It's all the factors I use schema again, and the fact they don't have that structure they can build on. It's a very important idea. Okay. Fine, guys, we're fast, guys. Multiple representations. We use this a lot, of course, in physics. The only trouble is, although it's just like breathing to us, to them it isn't. And when we jump from graphs to tables to equations to specialized diagrams, free body diagrams, things like that, we jump in and out of it because we're so used to it, we don't even see the problem for kids doing it. But for them, thinking about it in a different way requires training. We've got to give them the chance to do the job properly. Now, this bridging is saying, okay, let's say you recognize by doing some question and answer stuff with students that there are certain naive conceptions in your class about a particular concept you're going to teach. What you need to do is find a way to get to the student so that they've got a chance of changing that naive conception. And the idea here is that what you try and do is find something, an anchor for them, which is correct. Find some spot in their reasoning process, in their schema, that is actually right, fit from the physics point of view, and proceed from there. If you go from a point where they have an incorrect idea, then you're never going to be able to bridge it. But if you find something that they all tend to agree on, and it's good physics, and you can go forward from there, that's a good way to go at the whole thing. This is a very important one. They shouldn't believe it because they say, now, this is really the right way to do it. They've got to believe it themselves or it will never get changed. I mean, that's part of the mental attitude that they have to have. And again, every student's different. Okay, so these are, based on all those ideas, these are goals that Redis came up with that he thinks are important. Our students don't understand what the physics they're learning is about in terms of the strong basic concepts. Once again, this structural idea of concepts. Firmly rooted in the physical world. And when you're presenting new things, present the idea first and the name second. So that if you do it the other way around, they're so busy memorizing the name and the definition that they just don't even think about the concept at all. Coherence. Our students should link the knowledge they acquire in the physics class into coherent physical models. If you go back to the principles 1 and 2, these two here. I don't know where it is. Anyway, you find them. some guys that isn't working.
The principles are on page 6, implications of housing and modern times.
Computers for them. Anything else that is to do with?
Press too many buttons.
Eh?
Press too many buttons at once.
I did. Yeah. You're right. I don't know how to do it.
Bottom left corner.
Eh?
Right, well, just in the bottom left corner.
Where?
My practical, all the leaks, close it, reopen.
Oh, sure.
We
don't have the time.
We all have the charts.
Why don't I just go talk to you? Is that okay with you? Okay. Right on. So, we're on page 10. Page 10. Goal number one, we think, should understand the physics. Number two, coherence. Should link the knowledge they require into physical models. Functionality, this is going to have to both of you. Use it, and when to use it. Okay. Now, you think, okay, good. I know what to do now. I'm going to try to start to do it. Bad news. There's another second cognitive level which actually overrides all the cognitive stuff. And there's three basic ideas. The expectations thing, and that's on page 11. Expectations affect what students listen to and what they ignore. They affect which activities students select in constructing their own knowledge base and in building their own understanding of the course. And so what this again points to is the fact that trying to be relevant is really, really important. Let's go on to the next one, metacognition, thinking about thinking. This is a really important thing we don't do a very good job of. And so what the students should be trying to do is have experiences where they can actually learn themselves about problem solving and so on. Okay. One math guy, page 12, on the top of the page, thinking about thinking. What he did, we had those on the board, he had up on the wall. What exactly are you doing? Can you describe it precisely? Why are you doing it? How does it fit in the solution and so on? And it seemed to work very effectively when working with problem solving, to force the kids to actually recognize. The second one, the third one, affect, motivation, self-image, and emotion. It's very hard to do much about that at all. But you certainly need to be able to empathize with the kids and get them involved, otherwise you're going to have real trouble in the past. Okay, next page. Current state of physics. I'll have to just leave that for you as we've got to get cracking. The bottom one, goals for experimental work. Experimental work can be focused around one or more of the types of lab activities below. And this is mostly for university, but certainly we try to do those. The one we're going to do today, confirmation, is we're taking Planck's constant, and we're going to be finding out what it is in terms of LEDs. Concept building, number 5, is an extremely important one. Mechanical skills, maybe not so much at high school. Anyway, what we're going to be working on is number 5. Okay, next page. We're going to try and do microwave only. We'll leave that out until another day, I guess. The 2, 3, and 4 is what I'd like to try and do today. We're just on track. There are 3 we're going to do. The first one is a qualitative investigation of the relationship between energy of a photon and its frequency using LEDs. And what we're going to do there is take some little watch 1.5 volt cells. Yeah, I might just start passing things out now.
And they get pinky, right?
They keep those, yeah. There are 2 bags. Whoa.
Hang on.
One bag has got a bag in it with a knob on it, and that's for you to keep. The other bag is identical, but it's, it doesn't have the knob on for you to give to a friend at your school, so that you can sort of...
I've got the knobs, I think, the little black ones?
Yeah, the little black ones. That's right, good. Okay.
I'm not. Okay, just